You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farah. Coming up tonight after 7, it's True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour. In tonight's stories, a woman decides whether she's a wig person or a scarf person while undergoing chemotherapy. A magazine editor is confronted by rapper Foxy Brown. And a mother navigates the everyday after her son is gravely injured. It's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, it's been a little over a week since Donald Trump won the race for the White House. One issue that started emerging before the election but has come into sharper focus since Trump's victory on November 8th was what role social media may have played in the campaign.
And whether or not sites such as Facebook and Twitter helped spread false or misleading articles and information from often fake news sources.
Margo Suska joins us now. She's a professor of journalism and communication at American University. Margo, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first off, let's get clear on what we mean by fake news. What is it?
Well, fake news is exactly what it sounds like. It's a complete fabrication. Online, it may appear to look like a real news story with photos, even have a legitimate sounding URL and headlines, but it is completely and totally made up. And often, you know, we see user behavior, they'll click on a headline or share the story based just on a headline without any consideration whether or not it is or isn't fake.
I have to say, just researching to talk to you today, I saw a couple of examples of fake news that I'd come across on Twitter and just kind of went, wow, and kept thumbing down, didn't bother to fact check it. But can you give us a couple of examples of some fake news stories that blew up during the election?
Sure. One that I saw that I was particularly taken in by was a photo of Yoko Ono, and it had the headline, "I had an affair with Hillary Clinton in the 1970s. Now, I don't want to legitimize the site that ran the quote-unquote story, but it has a very news organization-sounding name, and the first paragraph of the story said that Yoko Ono had shocked reporters when she'd revealed the news. You know, the other headline that I think garnered the most hits, fake headline, was that the Pope was supporting Donald Trump's presidential bid. And, you know, these are, you know, may seem to some people, you know, oh, of course those are fake, but these were widely circulated on social media online.
Now, the Washington Post today was running a story with one of these purveyors of fake news, a resident of Texas, who said he was doing it, you know, sort of more as parody and expected people to look at it, click, fact check it, and then for it to be, you know, to come out that this was a fake story, but he was surprised that didn't happen. So is that sort of the template for what happened with fake news?
Well, I saw the interview with Paul Horner that you're referencing, and I think that he was asked by the Washington Post if he somehow is responsible for Donald Trump's victory because it was overwhelmingly conservative Republicans who shared the news. That's what the story suggested. I'm not sure that I believe Horner's claim that he thought people would fact-check every fake story that he put out. That's just not the news environment that we live in. And, you know, it's an issue really of both media literacy, but also an issue of time. You know, if you're looking at Twitter or Facebook, you have dozens of stories and headlines that you can click on. And the idea that somebody's going to see one and then somehow fact check it further, you know, I just don't think that really, I don't think there's an understanding there of how we're using, you know, using social media sites to get our news.
On the other hand, though, the internet does kind of function as its own judge and jury a lot of the time. It will put out the erroneous fact or the fake news, and then someone will come along. You've got sites like Reddit or Snopes, and they'll say, no, this has been debunked. And so there are a group of peers crowdsourcing truth on the internet.
Well, I think that I certainly agree with you, and I think that what I am most encouraged by is that recently there have been a startup of fact-checking websites, and there are 100 fact-checking groups worldwide. And these are groups like PolitiFact, which is a Pulitzer Prize-winning group that checks information online. 3/4 of those operate with a budget of $100,000 or less. So I think it's important to remember that, you know, there are people who are fact-checking or crowdsourcing these issues, but whether or not they're breaking through in the same way that Yoko Ono having an affair with Hillary Clinton, with, you know, that bogus headline, whether or not these crowdsourced fact-checkers or even these legitimate fact-checking groups are breaking through the clutter in the same way that these wild headlines and clickbait headlines are, I'm just not sure. I don't see that as a possibility.
Is there any evidence that we have right now post-election that some of this fake news that went around during the election maybe helped swing the election one way or the other?
Well, I think that we're in the stages now where researchers are starting to look at beyond just anecdotally what happened. But there is anecdotal evidence that suggests that social media and social media shares have had an influence on people who use social media. So the Pew Research Center reported recently 20% of social media users changed their mind or stance on an issue after seeing a post. Now, let's remember, millions of posts are flying around, but more fake news stories generated hits than genuine news stories in the last critical months of the election. And I think that's really important to keep in mind. So whether or not it's cause and effect, I don't think that we'll be able to say that. Certainly we can't say it now, and more research is going to be needed. But the top performing fake news stories generated more than 8 million shares, reactions, and comments. And that's more than legitimate news stories, interactions on social media. And that's considerable. That's considerable when you put it with the Pew figure. I think that it's fair to say for some people, fake news had likely had a connection to how they voted.
We're talking to Margot Suska right now about the proliferation of misleading or fake news on social media sites like Facebook and Twitter. She's a professor of journalism and communication at American University. And again, looking at how this fake news could have had an impact on the election. And Margot, you talked about how these fake news stories got millions of hits. So how is it that a fake story could overtake something from a more established news outlet like in the New York Times?
Well, so I was just at a talk on Tuesday at the museum here in Washington, D.C., where this was a subject that came up. And really, if you're looking at a site like Facebook, which uses algorithms in order to prioritize what's in a person's newsfeed, now, those algorithms aren't public. Of course, Facebook's not going to share them. But they are putting fake news stories right next to legitimate news stories, the algorithms. So I think in that way, it's tough for a consumer to know if they're seeing a fake news story right next to a real news story, or if they're Googling something and the top search item that comes up is a fake news story, but they've Googled it. You know, I think it's tough for people to understand how that happens, and that happens through the magic of Google and Facebook algorithms, which of course are secret. Now, what I'd like to think is that those algorithms are, of course, human constructions. And I think that we have to have a larger debate about what role Google and Facebook play in the debate about fake news.
And Facebook creator and founder Mark Zuckerberg weighed in on this. He was at a conference, last week's Techonomy conference, and was a little dubious about these claims that Facebook's algorithms had influenced the election. Here's what he had to say.
Voters make decisions based on their lived experience, right? I mean, one part of this that I think is important is we really believe in people, right? And that they can, like, you don't generally go wrong when you trust that people understand what they care about and what's important to them, and you build systems that reflect that. And, you know, part of what I think is going on here is people are trying to understand the result of the election. But I do think that there is a certain profound lack of empathy in asserting that the only reason why someone could have voted the way they did is because they saw some fake news. Right? I think if you believe that, then I don't think you have internalized the message that Trump supporters are trying to send in this election.
Okay, an interesting response there from Facebook creator, founder Mark Zuckerberg. What do you make of that, Margot?
Well, I think it's interesting that he also said that identifying the truth is complicated. And I certainly take issue with that when it comes to knowing the difference between a fake news story and a real news story. And let's remember, Facebook has 1.7 billion users worldwide. So we're not just talking about fake news proliferating here in the United States, but all over the world. What we do know is that two-thirds of Facebook users access news on the social platform. So there is a real, this for many people, millions of Americans certainly, Facebook is their first place where they're going to go to get access to news and information. And I think that that means that Facebook has to have more of a responsibility in how information is getting out into a democratic society. Whether you support Clinton or a third-party candidate or Trump, I mean, in a democracy, we're supposed to have news and information that is true, that is fair, and we need that. And the idea that Zuckerberg could say, well, you know, I think we're, you know, giving too much weight to this, you know, I don't think he's really understanding, or at least isn't admitting, just how large Facebook's role is in disseminating news and information and culture in U.S. society.
Marco Suska is with us right now talking about the proliferation of fake news on social media sites like Facebook, like Twitter, and the impact it could have had on the election.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about fake news? Do you think it affected you or maybe someone you know? Have you shared a story that popped up on your feed and then realized on further review it was completely made up? Or have people shared such stories with you? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment. A real comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation about the spread of fake news during the 2016 presidential election and the role that social media may have had.
And we'd like to hear from you. Do you think social media sites like Facebook and Twitter had an impact on the election? And how are you more likely to read an article from a lesser-known website over news from, say, the New York Times? And do you get your news from social media sites like Facebook more than other places? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
Margo Suska stays with us. She's professor of journalism and communication at American University.
And we go to our callers now. We've got Chris first in La Crosse. Chris, hi.
Hi. I'd like to get the guest's opinion on this. My thoughts are that Facebook is a forum for ideas, and whether those ideas are truth or fiction, I think their policy now is correct. They should be allowed to be shared on the same forum. However, Facebook does have a precedent for this, and that is celebrities. You go to a celebrity's page, they'll have a check mark confirming that that is a real celebrity, that is the person. So maybe there's a system like that that can be put in place where websites have to register with Facebook and they get a check mark so when they're shared around that, they're legitimate.
Interesting, Chris. Thanks for that thought and suggestion. Margo, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it certainly is an interesting perspective in the same way that Twitter identifies legitimate news organizations or politicians, for example. Certainly that might be a role that they could play. I do like the caller's idea that Facebook is a forum for ideas, and I think maybe we need to have a deeper conversation or deeper conversations need to happen about whether or not those ideas should be misinformation or disinformation. I think these are conversations that we will have in the future. And I do think it's important to note, too, in terms of using fake news and using social media for news as a venue to get news, that this is happening at a time when trust in the mass media is at its lowest levels in four decades. So I think that there are problems not just in social media and fake news, but I think that there are real issues across the mass media, television, radio, and support and trust in these other news organizations. So it's not just social media, I think, right now that is having an identity crisis.
Well, thanks a lot for that call. And we're going to go next to John in Muscadet. John, hi.
Yes, the guests there just made my point exactly. I think part of the problem for this rests squarely on the shoulders of mass media. And we could ABC, NBC, NPR, even Fox. I mean, we as the public sometimes don't know what to believe. I will listen to a speech right on beginning to end, you know, whether it's Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, whoever, and then I'll listen to a news report about that same speech, and I was wondering if I'm even listening to the same speech because it seems to be so biased depending mm-hmm. on what the media outlet is. And so therefore, you know, us in the public feel like we need to go and find the news out for ourselves. And sometimes the sites that we're going to may not be any more accurate than the mass media. So I would like to see true accountability for the mass media and putting out there what's actually being said and the truth, as opposed to slanting it according to the political preference of whoever's reporting it. And I think that would solve a lot of the problem.
John, thank you for that. And he says the blame lies squarely on the shoulders of the conventional media, that there are these biases inherent in these mainstream news outlets and consumers sense this and they go somewhere else. And maybe that's not exactly on the up and up either. So how do you solve something like that, Margo?
Well, I think that there are a couple of interesting points here, and I think that it is a partly for many in the audience a media literacy issue, that with the partisan media really taking off for outlets like CNN and Fox News, and that is pundits that they have. I think it's tougher for Americans to understand who's hired to be an opinion person and who's hired to be a legitimate news person. And I also think it's important to note that there is research in something called the hostile media effect, which says that if there was an article with two positions and you agreed with one of those positions and disagreed with the other, by just seeing the position that you disagree with in the article, you automatically think that that news story is biased against your position. So I think that the issue of bias is an interesting one, and I think that certainly it's, I'm not saying that media isn't biased, but I think that sometimes the public's perception of it is it's tougher for the public to understand what they're seeing and what they're getting.
We're talking right now about the role of fake news in the election right now with Margo Seska from American University. And we'll take our next caller. Amanda's with us in Appleton. Amanda, hi.
Hi. I am an English teacher at the high school level, and a lot of what we do when we're doing research papers and trying to have kids find information is we definitely tell them there's a lot of bias out there. So I do believe there's some shared responsibility between people seeking information and those who are providing it. I think that media outlets that want to be reputable have a responsibility to make sure that they're kind of censoring the bias that is coming out. However, I think a lot of the responsibility should fall back on the people seeking information. We need to use more critical thinking skills. We need to cross-check our resources. And when we see something on Facebook that seems too good to be true or seems too outrageous, we need to follow up and check outside of Facebook to make sure those sources are correct, to be responsible people. And that all falls into media literacy, as I think was previously mentioned.
So, Amanda, you think it's the job of the media consumer, not so much, say, someone like Zuckerberg or Facebook or Twitter?
Right. I think we all should know that Facebook is kind of an open arena where anything goes, almost. So we have a responsibility. If we really want to know the truth, if we really want to know what's out there, we have to find that ourselves.
Amanda, thanks a lot for that. And Margo, do you think it's realistic to expect consumers of news to go do the digging, to take the time and trying to be savvy consumers and making sure what they're digesting is true and unbiased?
I think it's big. You know, we have a lot of responsibilities on our plate as Americans, let's face it, between work and family responsibilities. I think it's tougher now than ever to find the time to do what the caller suggested. That is, but I absolutely agree with her that media literacy is a key component to understanding both mass media messages as well as, those included on social media as well. And I think part of what I talk to my college students about when we discuss this is, you know, a complete lack really of civics education anymore in the K-12 arena. And I think that that's a disappointment. We've seen in recent years such a strong emphasis on standardized testing, and I think partly social studies and civics have taken a back seat to that. And I think that this, what we're seeing now, perhaps media literacy, stems from civics not being as important as it used to be.
How do you think we should be teaching things like critical thinking and media literacy in school, in high school, elementary school, and beyond?
Well, I mean, I would love to see an understanding of what the media's role is in society. I know I have students who come here who don't really have an understanding of the watchdog press or the press as the fourth estate. And really the job of the press is to ask questions that other people won't ask of our government leaders and where our tax dollars are being spent. And oftentimes that's been framed lately, I think, as the media attacking a politician or the media being biased, when in fact they're really fulfilling the watchdog role that they should be as a fourth estate. So I'd like to see more of a discussion about what the role of the press is and what the role of politics is in society. And I think that, you know, in my work, I think that that would be very important.
And Margot, just literally a couple of seconds here, but do you think that the fake news that went around helped tilt the election one way or the other?
I guess I'm on the fence on that. I think that there were so many partisan sources of information and news going around this year, and it was such an ugly campaign, really, that I don't know that it was the reason that Trump won over Clinton. But I do think that it's troubling to consider how it could extend in the future.
Margot, thanks so much for joining us. That was Margot Suska, professor of journalism and communication at American University. She joined us to talk about the role that social media may have played in the spread of fake news during the 2016 presidential election. You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.